Sarah Palin's personal credit card was hacked after she denounced WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Websites for MasterCard and Visa were temporarily shut down, and PayPal was attacked after they decided to stop processing payments to the online group, which continues to release secret government and corporate documents. Groups with monikers like Anonymous and Operation Payback are taking credit and vow to continue as long as the U.S. and other governments put pressure on WikiLeaks and its allies. Hacking, of course, is hardly new, but James Lewis says these recent attacks have a new element. They're decidedly political. They're now what some call hacktivism. If you have questions about the tit-for-tat cyber war over WikiLeaks, who's affected, how it's done, and how it might affect you, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. James Lewis directs the Technology and Public Policy Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and kind enough to join us today here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And is this cyber warfare?
No, it's not cyber warfare. It's cyber kabuki. So you have to enjoy it. It's politics. It's a new kind of politics, but it's not warfare. People get excited about things like this, but the denial of service attacks that we see are the most basic form of attacks. This is nothing compared to warfare. But it is like a big demonstration. It is like those anarchists who march in front of the IMF and throw bricks and wear black scarves. So, you know, there's an effect.
The denial of service attacks, this is flooding someone's website with requests and basically overwhelming it.
Yes, that's correct. And the people who've set this up, the Anonymous folks, have done a pretty good job of recruiting a lot of people to install something on their computers that will let them attack whatever the target of the moment is.
Well, we've been accustomed to this being used by spammers who seize your computer illicitly and secretly, and you become part of a botnet.
That's correct. And, you know, this is not a new technique. When the Russians were annoyed with Estonia a few years ago because they had moved a statue of a World War II Soviet soldier, this is what they did. They did a denial of service attack. And it, you know, again, it wasn't war. It put some pressure on the Estonians. We see this all the time in Asia. You saw it against the Georgians. So denial of service is basic. It's common. It happens all the time. And it's a way to make a statement.
And is it effective?
No. In fact, one good test about whether the agency or the target has been awake for the last 2 or 3 years is if they have any trouble with a denial of service attack. And if they do, that's a bad sign because this has been around for years. People should know how to deal with it.
And the tell us about who is behind it, this group Anonymous?
Well, it looks like another one of these coalitions that form on the internet of people with shared political beliefs and common views, and they find a way to communicate. Some people talk about a website called 4chan, and that was a place where they all got together, and they feel very strongly. They have a strong anarchistic streak, and they feel strongly about Assange and decided to make a statement.
The group had been associated with disputes with the Church of Scientology.
Scientology, Pirate Bay, they've been around in the past, and whenever something displeases them, they launch one of these denial of service attacks.
Yet, this is not these people don't know each other by actual name. They don't have a list of membership. This is pretty amorphous group. There's also something called Operation Payback. Are they one and the same?
They're largely the same. I mean, more people are involved in Operation Payback. This is a spontaneous movement. You have people around the world who connect through the internet and can download this software that lets them do the denial of service, who know how to do a denial of service attack. And they spontaneously have leapt into the breach here to defend WikiLeaks.
And there was a 16-year-old who was arrested today in the Netherlands, apparently in connection with this. Would that come as any great surprise?
You know, one of the things you'd want to say to these people is it would probably be a good idea not to operate from a Western country, because in places where the law is enforced, you do run some risk. But again, it is anonymous, as you said, and there's a fair chance that it's just not going to be worth the effort to track all these guys down.
Hackers, we became accustomed to, it's a different culture, it sounds like,
right,
than the people we're talking about here.
Yeah, very much anti-government, very much libertarian, very in the extreme edges, anarchistic. Interesting culture, some fascinating stuff, but strong political views that are now being expressed.
Denial of service attack, that does not sound like what happened to Sarah Palin, though.
No, that sounds more specific. And usually the more sophisticated cyber criminals, they're in it for the money. They're not making a political statement. And so stealing credit cards, stealing one credit card really isn't a big deal. It's nice, but it's, you know, the real pros go after 10,000 or 30,000. They're doing it in bulk.
And but this is obviously targeted and has political content as well.
That's correct. And, you know, Sarah Palin's been hacked before. She really needs to do better at her passwords.
The people behind this, there has to be some place where you centralized place where people get information about how to go about this or download that information about making their computers available.
Well, there are online communities. And one of the things that the internet has changed is before people like this might have been isolated. There might have only been one or two in a town. And now they can connect and form a virtual community. And those communities can operate over websites like this 4chan. They can use IRC circuits, a particular kind of internet circuit. They find ways to connect. Social networking. This is the pattern of cybercrime and the new pattern of internet politics.
We're talking with Jim Lewis, director of the Technology and Public Policy Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, about hacktivism. 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. Scott's calling on the line from Jacksonville.
Yes. Hi. How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks.
Mainly, I just wanted to call and let you know that it's, even though it's a big group on the internet, there are small localized groups that are all for this. I'm not part of it because I'm in the military right now, so I try to stay away from all that kind of thing. But I do have friends that, you know, they actually get together, and not just on the internet, but like Starbucks, the library, or whatnot.
So they physically get together at Starbucks or the library, places where they can use Wi-Fi.
Oh yeah, definitely. They don't want cops or anything knocking down their doors at home. You know, mom and dad are there. You know, they don't want to scare anybody else. But if there's an open Wi-Fi spot, like at McDonald's or Starbucks, yeah, they'll more than happy stop by there and blast away, pretty much.
And these friends, Scott, what is their motivation?
Primarily political. A lot of times, though, it's just for the fun of it, you know? I mean, we're talking about 15, 16, 17-year-olds, you know? They're like, we're in a group, got a computer, we have power, you know? It's a little uprising, like a grassroots thing.
Scott, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Jim Lewis, does that sound right?
Sounds exactly right. I think that was a good way to summarize it. These are very often young folks. They're smart enough to not do it from home. It is a political movement, but there's an element of fun, or you could maybe call it mischief, involved in this. And it is a way to express an opinion. One of the things I always wonder is if people weren't able to be anonymous, what would they say that would be different? And that's one of the problems with the internet, is that when you let people be anonymous, they might do things they wouldn't otherwise do.
Let's go next to Ian. Ian's on the line from Kansas City.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm kind of part of Anonymous, and I wanted to kind of give my take on this.
Go ahead, please.
Well, basically, Anonymous is really nothing. They're just kind of an amorphous group that does random things. They're not really anti-government. They're not really anti-anything because they don't really know. It just kind of happens. And yeah, like the previous caller said, it is a lot for fun, but for the most part, they just, I don't know, they're trying to uphold freedom of expression on the internet, and that's kind of the whole point of being anonymous.
Can you tell us any of the efforts that you may have known about?
Let's see, there's, of course, Operation Payback, which hasn't just started with this, with the Julian Assange thing. It was actually present before with the RIAA and the MPAA's attacks on the Pirate Bay and several other...
And file sharing.
File sharing, right. Yeah, and file sharing sites. Before that, you, of course, have Chanology, which was the attack on Scientology. And there's been numerous attempts to kind of create discussion throughout the entire country about things that they see as wrong, like Scientology or this attack on WikiLeaks.
And where would these discussions take place?
The discussions take place in specific image forums, whether they be 4chan or others.
Image form? What is an image form?
An image forum is basically a place where you post a picture of something and then you write some kind of blurb about it. The kind of thing that people really don't understand about 4chan specifically is it's not really this hotbed for political talks or anything. Actually, it's largely pornography and gore pictures and...
Manga.
Japanese manga.
Things called memes, which are basically just funny pictures that are created from other pictures by superimposing text on them or creating random weird looking pictures that are either funny or...
But in amongst that, somebody would say, RIAA is blocking my freedom to share music files. Let's all get together and do something.
Yeah, they want net neutrality. That's really what they want. They want the ability to say and do what they want on the internet.
Again, Jim Lewis, is Ian's description right?
Great description. A lot of these websites are a lot of fun if you look at them. There is some strange stuff on it, so maybe a little parental discretion is advised. But they are spontaneous communities, and they're kind of like the old flash mobs, you know. There are a lot of people who have common interests or shared interests, and sometimes they unite around a particular point. They feel very strongly about their ability to express themselves on the internet, and that's going to collide with things in the real world sometimes, like WikiLeaks.
Ian, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
We're talking about hacksterism and the WikiLeaks controversy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller in. Let's go next to James. James with us from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Pretty good.
I've also wondered why the government doesn't try and amend the Copyright Act to allow copyright protection for government documents and at the same time allowing a public use license that would only protect these documents if they were, say, classified. Otherwise, they would be free to be used without any reservation.
You'd think being stamped secret would be protection enough. Would copyright protection be more efficient, do you think, Jim Lewis?
The problem that they have is that the WikiLeaks folks, and this is what I think the question gets to, the WikiLeaks folks, you know, the most you could say about them, maybe we'll get them under the secrets, the Espionage Act of 1917. Maybe we'll get them under receiving stolen goods or something, but there isn't a good legal hook to get them. And if you could move these documents into the IP protections, maybe you could have a better hook for going after them, but just a hard process. And so, you know, WikiLeaks exploited a vulnerability that has existed in the system, and we'll probably find some way to fix it. IP might just be too hard because of all the economic issues around it.
Well, a lot of people are saying, yes, WikiLeaks has been the purveyor of all of this, but the State Department is responsible for lax security and making these things too easy to get.
Yeah, that was the big problem, is a single private should not have been able to download 250,000 cables onto a Lady Gaga CD. And there is technology that would prevent that. This isn't a new problem. Companies have faced it. And we didn't have the safeguards in place. After 9/11, there was a big emphasis on information sharing and letting people look at all the documents and databases so that we wouldn't miss the needle in the haystack, to use the favorite cliche. And the problem was is we built the system for information sharing, more information sharing, but we didn't change the safeguards around it from the old safeguards we had in place in paper days, including classification. So that's where there was a hole.
James, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's go next to Tim, and Tim's with us from Louisville.
Going back to the Sarah Palin attack, I was just wondering, we are seeing some more sophisticated attacks on specific people. Is there any kind of information or any kind of, trend towards maybe some of these more advanced attacks going towards political movements or anything like that?
Yeah, not just Sarah Palin, but the Swedish prosecutor who's involved in the allegations against Julian Assange.
Certainly the ability to do this is out there, and one of the things that we've seen maybe in the last year is that the higher-end cyber criminals will use things like Facebook, get personal identification, personal information on you, and then do targeted attacks. In the past, it's been mainly on wealthy individuals, high-ranking business executives, scientists, and you wouldn't be surprised to see it start to shift to some of these political opponents. But one of the vulnerabilities of putting up your pet's name on Facebook, and I'm not saying anybody does that, is if you then use it for your password, they're in. And actually, we have seen stuff like that happen. So it's an interesting point as to whether the things that we now see being used in cybercrime at the high end will move over into politics.
Tim, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Let's go to Sam. Sam with us from Minneapolis.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the air, and I'll take any responses off the air later. I was wondering if it might be more helpful to discuss this semantically a little bit more broadly. The words like criminal or prank are often being used, but I think there are many instances where you can look at this type of behavior as particularly analogous to, say, civil rights era sit-ins, especially with like denial of service situations. The commentator earlier was saying, oh, these aren't effective at all, and arguably that's true. You could say that those sit-ins were not effective and they didn't really hurt people's business or anything along those lines. But in the court of public opinion, it does change people's attitudes and points of view,
Sam,
to situations at hand.
Just to point out, a lot of those sit-ins were consciously illegal, trespassing, among other things, and that
exactly.
was partly the
yeah.
point.
But when we talk about them now, do we talk about them as criminals, say, in a North Carolina luncheonette, or do we talk about them as activists?
And Sam, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're running out of time. I need a reply.
That's a really great point, and it's interesting. You know, the political effects aren't sure. From what I see from people in the U.S., it's probably backfired, a lot of hostility. On the other hand, what I see from some European countries is it's working pretty well. They're angry at the U.S. It's not exactly like the sit-ins, because the sit-ins, the people were willing to identify themselves. They were willing to stand up and say, it's me. But yeah, there are some parallels.
Jim Lewis directs as a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and he joined us today in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here. We'll see you again on Monday. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.